Hi everyone, and we're oh, Sandra, it's too good. Like, you just keep giving these gifts.
But I genuinely don't have any idea what you're laughing at, Kenny.
Oh, they're actually gonna do a Punjabi prison match with Jinder and Randy Orton.
What?
Battleground.
Is that a real thing?
They're gonna do it.
Is that a seriously a real thing? I didn't know about.
Oh, it's so shit.
Not kidding on, they're actually...
This is like, well, Sports Kita. I mean, they're not very reputable, but they're reporting it, and a couple other places are reporting it, so... Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so glad that you didn't tell me that before we started recording, because that's amazing.
Oh, SmackDown can't draw a full crowd. What will make it better? A Punjabi prison.
Punjabi prison match, of course.
Oh, good. God, it's so good.
I would say I can't believe it, but I totally can believe it, and I'm actually pretty thrilled. So
good
shit.
Lord, a Punjabi fucking prison.
Fuck's sake, why is this story still going on? I don't understand. I just
my favorite Facebook post so far was Thomas Taylor, who said there's not enough Imodium to stop the drizzling shits that will be that match. Fair play, Thomas, you won.
Oh, fair play indeed. That's amazing.
So this is the SmackDown summary, where we're going to be talking about Punjabi prison, apparently.
This is actually a real thing.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, so, this is episode number 48. We're almost a year. We're going to be talking about the fallout from Money in the Bank, to SmackDown and all that kind of stuff. We both watched the show. We both watched Talking Smack. But Sandra, you did alert me before we, recorded earlier on today that you wanted to say something before we started. So I don't know what you're going to say, but the floor is yours.
Well, and I think I was looking in the Facebook group, which I don't do nearly as often as I should, right? Because I find Facebook overwhelming. But I was looking on the Facebook group last night, and I don't have the post in front of me because I can't find it because I was half asleep when I was looking at this. But there were some people that were getting pretty hostile about the fallout from the Money in the Bank ladder match, the women's one, not the men's one. And I think for the most part in our Facebook group, there's been a lot of good discussion about, you know, the things that Kenny and I talked about on the Patreon podcast as well, like why it bothers some people that James Ellsworth was the one to take down the briefcase, why it doesn't bother other people, why some people love it, why some people think this is like a brilliant decision. And obviously we're going to get into on SmackDown the fallout and what they're doing to try to rectify it. Or, you know, for me personally, it seems like this was the plan all along. But I saw some hostility toward people, and I've seen some hostility toward people on Twitter as well. And just, I guess, the toxicity in some of the discussion that this has evoked. And I just kind of wanted to say, calm down, people. Like, have respectful discussions, be adults. Like, it's okay to disagree. But if someone, like, there were some women that I saw saying that it really upset them just on a personal level for the same reasons that it upset me, right? Like, it being the first Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, something women have never had before. And if women are saying, you know, this hurt me, like, it, you know, like it offended me on a personal level because it's something I've been waiting for and it just felt like a slap in the face. I saw some people responding to those women saying, oh, you need to just get over it. You need to take wrestling a little less seriously. You need to just, you know, calm down. You need to, you know, not be so offended by everything. And that's, I don't think, the way to respond to those types of comments. I think it's important to listen to each other. There are some women who absolutely love the finish of the Money in the Bank ladder match, but I think it's important to listen to people's experiences and not belittle them. And so I guess that's just what I wanted to say, because, like, for me, a lot of the sexism discussion and whatnot, it's not just because a man grabbed it for a woman and that's like inherently sexist. It has to do with like the whole video package before Money in the Bank, right? They were saying like, look to the past, to look to the future. And they were like, look at the past history of women's wrestling. And this is the culmination of the history of women's wrestling and all that. And if the problem for a lot of women like me, and this is like just kind of something that I was thinking of last night, if you look to the history of women's wrestling in WWE, it's shite. like, it's not a good place to look. Like, there have been some fantastic performers. There have been some amazingly talented wrestlers in the past of, you know, women's wrestling and WWE. But they've never really gotten all that much time, and they've really never gotten all that much spotlight. And especially in the past 10 years or so, it's been absolutely terrible. So the fact that that's changing means a lot to people like me who have been like clinging to wanting women's wrestling. And like, that's why it's an issue, is because this is something we've never had before. And that first image was tarnished for us. So to everyone who's just like, oh, get over it, or it's not sexist, or it has nothing to do with gender, I think it's easy to say that when you haven't been waiting for so long for a moment like this that we've never gotten to have. And so just, I don't know, listen to us when we say those types of things, maybe, is what I wanted to say. I'm rambling, but that was kind of it.
I think that's a good point. I think that I think there's two sides to it. And I'm not going to name names because I just don't think it's constructive. But there's somebody who listens to this show, and I appreciate their contributions on the Facebook page and all that. And they took something I had said in the Money in the Bank podcast, and they perpetuated it on the Facebook community that we have, as if I was being sexist and I was telling people that their opinion didn't matter, which I did not say in any way, shape,
or form. No, that's not what you said at all.
Now, if you have construed something that I've said, feel free to get in touch. Like, I am one of the, like, I'm not bragging at all, but like, I get back to pretty much everybody on Twitter. Like, I'm not a person who, like, I mean, you know, like with Sandra, like, she sometimes just shuts off for a day or so because that's just how she is. I'm the sort of person, I'm always kind of on my computer doing work anyway, so I kind of respond to everybody. It's very easy to send me a message and be like, hey, what do you mean by this? But to go and like try and perpetuate a view that I don't have, I don't think it's really cool. Now, I get that that person is very frustrated and very angry about the ending to the Money in the Bank women's match, and he feels that it is a sexist thing. I do not agree in any way with him, and that's fine, because we can have a discussion about it, and we can talk about it. You know, for me, it's like, some of the things that I would kind of come back at, you know, like, people have said, well, you know, it's the first ever women's Money in the Bank. I mean, Look back at the first ever Hell in a Cell match. Kane ripped the door off and beat up The Undertaker. That didn't end in the right way. That was a big schmoz finish on the first one, and people look back at it like it's a classic. Now, I think a lot of it has got to do with follow-up and how you follow through on stuff, and whether it's right or wrong, and again, I do understand whether you like it or not, it is totally your call, and you should not be belittled for liking something or not. Trust me, I got so much shit for not liking the gender thing. But like, you know, the positive side, if you're someone who is a big proponent of women's wrestling and somebody who wants to see it grow, and first of all, I would bet thousands of pounds that this was the plan all along. If anybody thinks they've just changed this on a whim because of the reaction, this was the reaction they wanted. Like, and people say, well, that's even worse because they've done this thing to shit all over it and to like make us angry, and it's like, yeah, they're trying to make you angry at this point in the story that they're trying to tell. And it's like, it's very interesting because a lot of stuff's happened the last couple of weeks, and I feel quite bad that I don't know if I can really talk about it. I'll give you an example. There was a WCPW show about a week and a bit ago, right? And mm-hmm. There was an angle at the end, and people threw beer into the ring, right? Now, what also happened, apparently, I was not there, so I don't want to say, but apparently there was some abusive fans that were abusive to certain portions of the female audience at that show. For that part, I do not condone it whatsoever. And I think you should be, you're an arsehole if you just start, like, you know, messing with people and all that sort of stuff, for no reason. But the other point that was interesting to me was, and this is maybe for me just, like, having watched wrestling for a long time and seen it go through different variations, there was a sort of big outrage about, you know, oh my god, like, people were throwing plastic cups of beer into the ring, and it's like, I promise you, I know enough wrestlers who would dream for that level of emotional investment from a fan. If a fan is willing to throw a £5 pint that they have paid for in a plastic cup at the ring, think of the investment that they have in that character, or how angry they are at a character, right? So for me, I was like, I think there's part of that that's good because you've invested them. But the part of it that's bad is if it involves other fans and, you know, because if you're a company and you put a performer out there and they're going to do something that's going to try and incite fans to get angry and annoyed and all that sort of stuff, and a couple of people throw a pint, you know, that's kind of up to you as a company how you deal with that, right? Like, that's your call. Like, WCPW kind of had a bit of an issue because they'd kind of wanted everybody to throw glow sticks at Adam Pacitti when he turned heel in October. So, you know, it's, one minute you want people to fling something, the next minute you don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dangerous precedent. Like, throwing stuff in our ring is okay. Because, I mean, I know a lot of wrestling promotions who would not condone people throwing stuff in the ring at all.
But the thing that made me laugh was, it was like, oh, you know, be sensible about what you throw in the ring. Because, you know, a glow stick is okay, but a plastic pint isn't. I'm sorry, I feel like a glow stick could do more harm to me than a plastic pint. I feel like a pint could hit off my chest and I could have the warm glow smell of beer on me, which I would enjoy. Whereas, like, if a glow stick got me a certain angle, it could take my fucking eye out. But the point I was trying to make, which I've kind of veered off into a tangent, is that what I've felt the last couple of weeks is that there's a lot of people on both sides of the coin, whether you are somebody who thinks that things are terrible or thinks things are great, that if you voice your opinion, there's this toxicity that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. That you can't have an opinion. And I was listening to a podcast earlier today, completely unrelated to wrestling, with Ricky Gervais, who I'm a big fan of. And, you know, he did The Office, and he did Extras and all that sort of stuff. And he was asked about comedy and how he views comedy. And he said, for him, he treats comedy as he tries to please himself. And that's it. He doesn't think about anybody else when he does something. And he said the reason for that is because everybody now gets offended at various things. But see, like, say I get offended at something, it doesn't mean I'm right. It just means that offends me. You could get offended at something, it doesn't mean you're right. People, no matter what you do, there will be people who will be offended. So you don't necessarily have to agree with the people who are offended, but just listen and communicate and sort of like, if you feel that you can debate somebody or you want to, go at it. There's some people who you can't. Like, you just can't. You
know, right.
You give it a go. Like, there's been times before where I've tried to, like, combat somebody and they just don't want to have, you know, they want to just, like, name call or whatever. So you just kind of shut it down at that point. But I think that what I would say, just for whatever side of the coin you're on, is just have your opinion and display it respectfully with other people. And if you feel that it's just, you're not getting anywhere from it, like they're not willing to have a conversation, just walk away. Because...
yeah.
At the same time, I think you should have conversations with people who have different opinions. Because if you live in an echo chamber, it's a dangerous way to live, I think.
I mean, you're never going to learn anything or get any sort of different worldview if you just live in an echo chamber. And I think it's about being respectful, right? Like, I mean, I saw people come after you on Twitter and on Facebook or whatever and, like, be like, oh, but you're sexist for not minding the end of... like, I don't think that makes someone sexist.
I'm a man. So my opinion, my
like
opinion
what would
is
make
lesser.
You sexist as if you came at someone who, and you know, like I've said before, and you know, especially seeing the fallout and whatnot, I love from a storyline perspective the end of the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. It just
and,
like
and also,
it,
just to say very quickly, right? I grew up with a single mom, right? Mm-hmm. We are one of the first podcasts in the world to have a full time female co-host. So fuck you if you say I'm sexist, because trust me, I am the least sexist motherfucker you'll ever meet.
Anyway, true. Sorry. And I think, like, one of the things that, you know, what would make you sexist would be if you came at me on the Patreon podcast, which you did not do. This is not what you did. But if you were to say, oh, Sandra, just get over it. Like, it doesn't matter to women. Like, it's not hurting anybody. And your opinion's not valid. And, you know, pat me on the head and go run along, little lady. Your opinion just is very silly.
Go back to the kitchen, Sandra.
Right. That would make you sexist. For you to say you didn't think it devalued the match and everything, that's your opinion and that's totally valid. I mean, there are women who think the very same thing. I don't know. It seems like this has just incited a whole lot of nastiness in a lot of people. And so I think name calling and resorting to just, you know, saying, if you don't see why it's sexist, then you're a part of the problem. And that's just not constructive dialogue.
It's not. And sometimes you don't want to talk about, like, constructive dialogue. You just want to go, I thought that was shite. And that's all you want to say. And that's fine.
And that's fine too.
I put a tweet out earlier on today because we're going to talk about SmackDown here. But before we do, just for perspective, so bear in mind that like the majority of people I've spoken to on Twitter have disagreed with me from the moment that James Ellsworth grabbed that briefcase, and it's been like 2 days of me trying to argue why I've liked it and why I've liked it. So I thought, right, okay, this could be interesting. I'm going to put out a tweet with a poll of what people think about the storyline right now after SmackDown Live, but before next week. So here was the poll. The poll I asked was, what do you think of the storyline after Women's Money in the Bank with the Carmella promo, Bryan's decision, and next week's rematch set in stone? There was three options. There was, I liked it, it was a good story. There was, it was okay, but to be decided whether I like it or not. Or, I don't like this angle, right? And there were 1,463 votes. Do you want to guess? What do you think got the highest votes? What do you think got the lowest votes?
I'm guessing the highest number of votes would be I liked it. It was a good story.
You would be correct. 36% of pollers voted that they liked it. That was a good story. Equally, 36% thought it was okay, and 28% didn't like it. Which is interesting to me. I thought it would have been, I was expecting it to be like 72% hated it and like 12%. But it seems like actually there's more people that liked it than didn't. But those people are in some ways maybe not being heard. Or they're not finding that they're finding that if they're talking about it, it's like, oh, right, okay, I'm not really allowed to talk about this because it's just, you know. Which just shouldn't be the case. So I was interested.
It shouldn't be the case. And I think I'm wondering how many people are kind of like me where I love it from a storytelling perspective, but it still just bothered me a visual perspective, right? Because like, and I think part of that just comes with being a female wrestling fan can be very frustrating in a lot of ways. And I don't get it as much because obviously being part of Inside the Ropes, I'm actually respected, right? Like you guys don't just treat me like that girl over there who doesn't know anything. You treat me like I actually have valid opinions. I mean, sometimes you question my opinions, like when I say that I'm in love with Bo Dallas, but that's fair.
Some
that's
of those
not
are
because
valid.
I'm a woman. That's
some...
because I'm mental.
Yes.
So
yes. Your bits don't differ whether you're mental or not.
Right, exactly. Like, I just like weird shit in wrestling. But, I mean, there's also experiences that I have, you know, outside of this community. Like, for instance, the other day at work, I was wearing my Stardust shirt, which I do regularly. And a guy, you know, just a customer came in, was like, oh, what's that shirt all about? And he goes, and I was like, oh, it's Stardust. He was a wrestler in WWE. You know, he's not there anymore. And he goes, you don't look like a WWE fan. And I was like, well, I am. You know, okay, thinking that would be the end of the conversation. And he side-eyes me. He goes, you just wanted the shirt, right? And I was like, I mean, yes, I wanted the shirt. That's why I purchased the shirt for myself. But also, I'm a big fan of wrestling. And then he goes on. He goes, oh, so you like theater? I do. I do like theater. That's accurate. However, I also like wrestling. That's a real thing. It's a real thing that women are wrestling fans. And I think a lot of the defensiveness from some of the women in the Facebook community as well, because I've seen some women get pretty defensive about it and, you know, get really angry too. And I think I just like want to explain where some of that comes from is just like, it's hard to be a female wrestling fan out in the world sometimes. And so our natural response is to be super defensive. And so stuff like this does leave kind of a bad taste in our mouths, right? Like, so, and that's all part of it. So for men who are like, why is this such a big deal to some women? Or I mean, like some men seem to be on my side about it too. Like, that's just kind of why, because those are the types of experiences that we have. Like, we always feel like we have to prove ourselves and prove our opinions and, like, work harder at being a fan for some reason, which is stupid. It's absolute bullshit, but that's just reality.
I think what's interesting is that, and I do want to very quickly give a shout out because I wanted to, like, prove, I felt like I had to prove this last night, but I shouldn't have to, but there was a girl, she's a wrestling subjective on Twitter, Kelsey Rees TWS, and she'd written a review of Money in the Bank, talked about why she didn't like it, and I sort of had retweeted it and said, you know, here's someone who didn't like Money in the Bank but is respectfully talking about why she didn't like it. And I think that she's an example of people who are like, it's a good conversation to have, because the thing is, like, it's like anything, right? If you're speaking to someone who doesn't understand your point of view, they're not going to understand your point of view by you screaming your point of view at them. By a discussion. But what I think is interesting, and I'm a complete middle ground person in it, so I'm the wrong person to ask. But I think there's a strange thing in wrestling there, but there's a lot of long term wrestling fans, male and female, predominantly male, but male and female, who grew up maybe during the 80s or the 90s or the Attitude Era or Hulkamania or whatever, where the wrestling narrative and the way they told stories was very different to how they tell stories now. And I think that in some ways it is worse now than it was then, but in some ways it's better. I think there's both, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that you're seeing that through Retro Raw, right? Like there's some things that are absolutely better, and there's some things that are bad, right? Like it's not just one or the other. It's a mix. And then I think there's a lot of female viewers that have come in from things like Total Divas and the Bella Twins and Bayley and Sasha and Charlotte and the Four Horsewomen and all that sort of stuff, who would never have come in during that other time period, you know? And I think that they would never have come in during that time period, so whenever that kind of stuff comes up, they just don't connect to that. And I think that, there's like a bit of a barrier sometimes, where you've got some older fans who want it to go in more of a crazy direction, but then you've got newer fans who kind of don't want it to go in that direction, and it's trying to find a middle ground where everybody can kind of be happy. And it's mm-hmm. it's difficult, I think. And I don't think you should necessarily like focus all of it on one of those audiences. I think you should try and satisfy as many people as you can, while still trying to have a cohesive narrative that you tell stories with.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I mean, you're never going to please everybody, right? Like, you just can't, because people are always going to have different opinions. Because
you can't have an episode of Monday Night Raw where you have Brock Lesnar come out to do a promo, which is UFC style, then have Natalia farting, then have two cruiserweights, then have, Roman Reigns. Like, there's too many different things that are completely different audience members that would watch that stuff. You know, whereas before, they would have a show that, like, people would want to watch the whole thing. Because it's like if you watch a TV show, you know, you're watching, if you watch Still Game or Breaking Bad or House of Cards or whatever, like, House of Cards doesn't midway through the show start doing a musical scene. You know? Like, because that would be ridiculous. It's supposed to be a sort of, you know, criminalized, politicized show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. So you know the narrative you're getting into for the whole time you watch it. And anyway, I think I'm rambling now, but there is a point to be had somewhere, if anybody can find it.
No, I think there is a point to be had. I mean, it's just about, you know, different audiences are going to like different things, and trying to find the middle ground is hard. And so, like, do I think WWE is a terrible company for having James Ellsworth grab a briefcase? No, I don't. Did it leave a bad taste in my mouth? Yes, it did. Do I love it as a story and as a narrative device? Yes, I do. I think that's just kind of...
Can you imagine if, like, 3 weeks ago, when we were having the conversation, where you were like, oh, you know, the welcoming committee, and, it's boring, and I could be like, well, if we have James Ellsworth pick up that briefcase, it could all change.
Right? And it has. And one of the things I do love coming out of Money in the Bank, everybody's talking about the women's division on SmackDown. Everybody's talking about it,
yep.
Which is very cool. Whereas, and I think I felt a little less sour about it on Sunday night than I did on Monday night, because after, like, I watched Raw for the first time in weeks this week. I didn't watch all of it, but I watched most of it. It was 2 hours and 48 minutes before there was a women's segment on Raw. So that happening right after the Money in the Bank controversy, I was just like, fuck's sake. Like, it's just, I don't know. It kind of felt like a slap in the face.
I don't know if you heard the Raw rundown, but when Dave and I were talking, I said, like, you know, this was not the night where we needed a bad women's segment. Like, this was the night where we needed, like, a good kind of, like, you know, yeah, women, you know. But, like, similarly, like, one thing I will say is, and I say this jokingly, so hopefully, I mean, all of our listeners are cool enough, but, like, ladies, the men's storylines have been wacky for years. Welcome to our world. Like, now you're going to deal with the weird finishes to matches. Like, I feel like it's like we've done the honeymoon period of, like, here's like the great stuff, and now we're settling into the marriage. But it's like, yeah, he's gonna leave the toilet seat up sometimes, and he might have a little bit of shit in the pan. You're gonna have to deal with it. But yeah, so let's talk about it. So we have SmackDown from Dayton, Ohio. Daniel Bryan is backstage, talking to Tamina, Charlotte, Natalya, and Becky, who are all kind of bickering. He tells them he's going to hear them all out, but first of all, he wants to hear what Carmella and James Ellsworth had to say, and we cut to the arena where Carmella and James Ellsworth come out. And it's interesting because Byron Saxton and Common, you know, JBL was having the narrative of like, you know, well, there's no rules, so she just, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. And then Byron Saxton saying, I can't believe the first women's Money in the Bank ladder match was won by a man. So I liked that they had two commentators dueling on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was
And they bit. Brought up all the points that, you know, that everybody's talking about online. I thought that was very well done. Also, how good is it to see Daniel Bryan back?
Oh, that man. So
I just love him.
Carmella comes in the ring. What I was happy about was I think this was completely Carmella's segment, not James Ellsworth's, which was the fear I think some people had. She comes out. I thought that she fucking nailed this promo. I thought
she was incredible. She was on fire.
Because I can't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted me saying, you know, don't you think that when she kind of she let the crowd get to it at one point? I said, I thought I made it better. Because she, like, you know, to her, she's like, to the character of Carmella, she doesn't give a shit about women's history or, you know, whatever. And she talks about it, she goes, you know, I don't care about women's history or anything like that. I care about winning.
She's like, I'm not here for girl power, that's for damn sure.
Which is
I
great.
Loved that line.
Which is great. Like, and then she's, you know, she's saying, you know, she was talking about some people were saying she's making a mockery of the division and she needed James Ellsworth to win the match for her. And then she said, you know what I say to that? Who cares? Which was great. Like, there's just, she doesn't give a fuck. So she, you know, talks about the other women in the match, talks about her being more intelligent. She lists other Money in the Bank ladder matches where there's been interference. She slams people on the internet for complaining about it. And I don't know how you felt. I felt that the fans were booing her here, not the company, which was, I think, what a lot of people thought might happen. I felt that she turned, whether it was a negative or a positive, whatever you sit on it, I felt like she turned whatever it was into a positive situation.
I think she did. I think they were absolutely booing her. And whether they're booing her or whether they're booing the company, like, it's the same thing with, are people actually booing Roman Reigns or are they booing the fact that Roman Reigns is Roman Reigns, right? But they were definitely booing and they were definitely having a reaction to Carmella having the Money in the Bank briefcase won by nefarious means that she doesn't deserve. And I loved her coming out and actually just addressing all of it. This very clearly seems like it was their plan all along. This is exactly the reaction they wanted. And so again, I'm always going to be of two minds about it, right? Because I love that. I love her harnessing that heat, and I love her just being a smarmy little dickhead about it. And then also saying, you know, she doesn't give a shit about girl power. She doesn't give a shit about, you know, women's empowerment and the first women's Money in the Bank ladder match being such a historic thing for the women's evolution. And I love that she doesn't care about any of that because she won and she wants to have her briefcase and she wants to have the prize, right? And she doesn't care how she gets it. She's Carmella. She's a little sneaky bastard.
Yeah, I think that she did great. She did great here. She really nailed it. And
And I think her interplay with the crowd was great. Like, the crowd getting to her, her being a little frustrated, like, no, seriously, I do deserve to have this. And, you know, and her, like, telling the crowd to shut up. I mean, she's doing very, very well.
Yeah, I thought she did a bit as well as she could do. Because I was sitting here kind of going, I really need her to do well here. Like, for all of my sort of defending. Because I did say to someone on Twitter, I was like, listen, I'll be the first to. Dan, I think it was Dan Bennett had mentioned to me. We were talking about it, and you know, I'd said, listen, they better follow up well, because if they don't, I'm gonna have to go on Twitter and be like, my bad, it was bad, it was bad. But I thought that she did really well with the opening segment. Like I say, so then we cut backstage to Daniel Bryan. Charlotte comes in to talk to him. Bryan points out, you know, technically it was no DQ, and she said that should only apply to the people in the match. They all wanted to make history, and unfortunately, I guess we did. And then she told Daniel Bryan to do the right thing and walked off. I always love when Daniel Bryan has to act conflicted, because I don't think he does it very well, because it's very difficult for him to do that. that kind of stuff unless he's like in the ring and really into it. But he tried. Bless his little cotton socks.
I always get the feeling that Daniel Bryan has trouble looking conflicted because Daniel Bryan doesn't actually care that much.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Like, you can tell, like, when he was talking to, you know, all of them, or when he was talking to him there, he's like, you know, whatever, there are no rules. He was, like, almost smiling as he's delivering this promo, because you can tell he's just like, I'm back at work. Whatever. I'm here again. And for some reason, that just makes me love him more.
Yeah, he so unabashedly does not want to be there. But that's what I love about him. So then we go to we have the New Day coming out. So we've now got, because the Usos, one thing that just drives me nuts is the sort of like interplay of like you know, Roman Reigns is the big dog that has his yard, and the Usos have the penitentiary, and it's like all these fictional places. And, like, weird shit they have. But the New Day just took the piss out of it and called... what did they call Big E, Sandra?
Depute E. I love it. Also, please let this mean that the New Day are still in cahoots with the Fashion Police.
That's true. Now, I did want to ask you, Sandra, very quickly, before we move on to this, because it was about the women's thing. So Dan Bennett and I had been having a chat on Twitter, and he had asked this question to you, but I know that you don't use Twitter all the time, so you might have missed it. He wants to ask you, you know, some people were saying, like, you know, Ellsworth helping Carmella up the ladder would be like Ric Flair holding Sasha from WrestleMania, right? And he was saying, what do you think of the idea that this would be more like Rick making Becky tap out instead of Charlotte?
Like, yeah, is that, I can see that.
What do you think of that analogy? Does that fit in any way from Sunday or not?
I think it does. I mean, I think it just depends how you look at it, right? Because, I mean, James Ellsworth isn't technically the winner of the match, but he definitely did grab the briefcase. And I think it almost does seem more like Ric Flair making Becky tap out to me, I guess. Like, I really would have preferred Carmella to climb the ladder and get the briefcase herself. I don't think it's entirely similar because it's like, it, just because of the different match stipulation, it can't really have an equivalency, right? But I think I understand where people are coming from when they say that it's more like that than just Ric Flair holding Sasha Banks back, for sure.
There you go, Dan. I asked the question. She gave the answer. We all had a good time. So we get Jimmy Uso against Big E, quick match, 5 minutes or so, and in the end, Big E put Jimmy away with the big ending. Just kind of continuing that, I guess. It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. I like seeing Big E Langston wrestle, because I think I just like him. He's good.
I dread the day that he leaves the New Day. I dread it with every 5 minutes, because I almost want if they all go solo to, like, still be together, but be solo people.
I don't think they have to break up the New Day to have singles careers as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, almost it becomes a faction rather than a tag. I mean, they are that weird thing where they're not really a tag team. They're not really a faction. They're in between.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think maybe once the New Day is done with the tag team story, because since they're in a new tag team division now, they haven't really interacted with the SmackDown tag teams a lot yet because they just came back. But, I mean, that could be the next evolution of the New Day, right? Like, have Big E Langston go for the U.S. title or something. I would be totally fine seeing that. I think it would be interesting. I don't want them to break up. And I think, I mean, I would be surprised if the WWE wanted to break them up anytime, even relatively soon, because, I mean, how much merch do they sell? They're so popular.
Oh, the merch. And then they were on Talking Smack, where they were, I've kind of fallen in love with the New Day again. Like, they're really funny. Like, they bring in the skeleton.
Same, they seem revitalized. Like, I love it.
Them making fun of Renee. Renee's asking, you know, what's your game plan? And they're like, why, we're not going to tell you our game plan. Like, oh, it was great. It was really funny. Daniel Bryan's backstage on the phone to Shane. Natalya and Tamina interrupt. Natalia's like, it's so great to have you back, Daniel. You know, it's so good that you're a dad now, and like, happy Father's Day. And Tamina is just doing it for fuck's sake. Look, incredibly well.
It's her default, I think.
Yep, and she was like, you know, are you going to let Carmella and her little sock puppet get away with it? And Bryan promised he would have a decision soon. Tamina just walks off. Natalya is still the most horrendous actress of all time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is, she so like, and again, I'm scared to say anything because now I'll be accused of body shaming, but like when Natalia goes home and she puts like pictures on Twitter or Instagram or whatever with like TJ, she's like adorable. She looks great, and she's like,
yeah.
But when she's wrestling, she looks like a cat.
She looks, I think, like she's turning into a cat.
She looks,
I
like
think
the
she's
lion
actually
from
turning into a
Wizard
cat.
Not Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, she really does. You're not wrong. I think that's intentional. I mean, I think she's actually transforming herself into a cat for her wrestling character.
Why not? Dasha Fuentes is backstage asking Naomi what she thought about the controversy. And she was talking about, you know, it's unfortunate, but she thinks Brian will make the right decision. She doesn't care who comes up with the contract because she'll be ready. Booker T then ran in with an axe kick and told her that she was wrong. No, I'm kidding. Lana then comes up and challenges Naomi to a rematch. She says if Carmella hadn't come out, we'd be looking at a new SmackDown Women's Champion, which makes zero sense, but cool. That's fine. Lana just wants another title shot, which is fine. And Naomi said she'd get another match next week. So we are going to see it again, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't really necessarily want to see it again. I'm not super sure why we need to see it again. But, I mean, Naomi being a fighting champion, I get that. That's cool. It'll be a match. I don't really know what it's going to do for Lana to just lose twice. Like, that again, it makes me scared that she's going to pull something out and cheat or, I don't know, like, be dastardly and get the title somehow, which is not what I want to see. I really don't want to see Lana as champion, so... we'll see how all that goes, but whatever. I guess that's just a wait and see for next week.
We then got a sit-down interview with Randy Orton, which is interesting.
Boo.
He said that he saw red when the Singh brothers attacked his dad. He took his eye off the ball. And if the goal was to make it personal, then mission accomplished. It's far from over, and he would even travel to India to RKO Jinder's family. Of course, I got excited and thought he was going to bring up Kali. He didn't. And he said,
can you imagine? Oh,
I am like, I'm not even opposed to the fact that they might do it. Oh my god, I would be so excited. Anyway,
can you imagine Kali trying to? I mean, I say Kali doing a run in, Kali doing a stumble in for the Punjabi prison match.
They need to keep him around till SummerSlam though, so I can see him live. Anyway, that's the deal. He said Jinder made a mistake and now there's no turning back. I think he was decent here. I think the problem is that the feud's not connecting, but I thought his performance and trying to... I don't think MD buys it, which I think is the problem. Like, I don't think his performance was bad. I think it's just like... It's almost like if I walked into an audition room and I delivered the perfect lines to play Annie on Broadway, that's fine. But nobody believes that I would be Annie, ever.
No.
So like, I just don't think MD believes that Randy Orton is the jilted son that wants to beat up the fake Indian.
See, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I mean, his performance was fine. It was Randy Orton, right? And he seems sort of halfway motivated about this, which is always pleasant because that makes it a little less boring. But the story just doesn't click, and I really wanted it to be over, and it's not over. And at this point, I was just like, why isn't this over? I mean, especially because Randy's like, I lost again, and he's so dastardly. It's like, you lost in exactly the same way you lost at Backlash. Like, you did not learn your lesson. You don't deserve another match.
That's true. I mean, yeah, it's true. I was going to try and argue, like, his point, but there's no point.
But there is no point. I mean, Randy Orton lost his championship rematch at Backlash.
To be fair, though, he, like, both occasions...
Or he lost the championship at Backlash. He just lost his championship rematch at Money in the Bank.
But both occasions he has lost because of those Singh brothers.
Well, of course it's been because of the Singh brothers. But I just don't want to see this match again.
Well, that's fine. But I'm just giving you the reason as to why he...
No, I know, I know. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, maybe Randy Orton should have learned his lesson, right? Like, oh, the Singh brothers got involved at Backlash. I threw them around, but it cost me because then I lost to the... whatever, the Colossus, is that what they're calling Jinder's finisher now? Maybe I shouldn't go and get distracted and throw the Singh brothers around again in the next match, because then maybe I could win it. Oh wait, I'm going to do that exact same thing, and then the exact same thing is going to happen to me?
I think that's solid advice, Sandra. Solid advice.
I'm just saying.
Up next was probably, for me, the biggest shocker of the show. Because, I'll be honest, When this match was, the graphic came up for this match, that's when I went to bed. And I woke up and watched the rest of the show in the morning. And I woke up and I was like, okay, I'll stick Nakamura and Ziggler on while I make some breakfast. So, you know, I'm poaching some eggs, and I'm really bad at poaching eggs, so I had to buy these pouch things that does it for you.
I have no idea how to poach an egg.
So, right, do you know what you're supposed to do? And I
no.
can never do it. So you're supposed to get like a frying pan, right, and put like water in it and have it boil, and put like a little bit of vinegar in it, and then like just like crack the egg in it, and the egg's supposed to just kind of poach, like on its own.
That sounds like a lot of work.
But these pouches are a fucking godsend, right? All you do, you get a saucepan. I'll show you this next week. You get
yeah.
a saucepan, fill it with water, bring it to the boil, simmer it down, and then you get one of these wee pouch things, you crack an egg into it, you put it in the thing, it shuts over, leave it for 5 minutes, take it out, you get a poached egg.
See, that sounds like a lot less work.
They're called poachies.
Poachies? That's adorable.
20 of them for £5.
Nice.
Anyway, I've digressed. So I woke up and I'm kind of making my eggs and I'm kind of watching this match. And for the first couple of minutes, I was like, oh, you know, Ziggler and Nakamura. And then I got really into it. Like, really, really into it. And I thought they had a really cracking match.
Yeah, I thought they did too. And I can't decide if it's because it was a lot better than their Backlash match or if it's because I'm so much more into Nakamura after his performance at Money in the Bank.
Oh, you are loving him now, aren't you?
I am. Like, there's something about it. He seems like he just needed a spark to, like, get going and become interesting, and that's what I've been waiting for this whole time. And then after his Money in the Bank performance where he was so badass, I'm like, yeah, Nakamura, I'm into you now. And he seemed more motivated in the match against Ziggler, too. I was expecting it to just be, you know, your standard fare. I don't know if I would say that I loved it. Like, I don't know if I thought it was, like, the most amazing match, but I thought it was definitely better than their Backlash one.
Do you think part of it is maybe to do with the fact that the Backlash match was so heavily hyped that it was almost like you couldn't deliver what they were hyping because it was like, you know, Nakamura's first match and, you know, it's going to be so good that it's like a month of build and then it's just like a match. Whereas with this, it was like it wasn't advertised, you didn't know what was going to happen, and they just went out there and had a really good match.
Yeah, that could be it. And I think the Backlash match was maybe more of a Dolph Ziggler match.
Well,
and
this
one maybe felt like a little bit more of a Nakamura match.
When Ziggler hit that zigzag, I legit thought he was pinning Nakamura.
I got scared. I actually did. I was like, oh no, you had better fucking not. I mean, they had Ziggler pin AJ Styles leading into Money in the Bank.
I was
like,
oh no, this is the annual summer push of Dolph Ziggler.
It's like, I don't want it. Push him into the sun. Nowhere else.
Push him into the sun. You say that now, next year we're doing the Dolph Ziggler tour. You'll be like, Dolph, loved your matches with Nakamura.
Oh, of course.
It's funny how that happens sometimes. You learn very quickly to change your opinions when somebody's in front of you. I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. So, yeah, really good match. Nakamura looks very motivated and, like, he feels like a star. Like, he feels
yeah.
like a big fucking star. Backstage, we have Sami Zayn talking to Daniel Bryan. Sami Zayn is in a suit, and he's like, Daniel Bryan's praising his performance at Money in the Bank. He says, you know, next week you got a match with Baron Corbin, and Sami's like, I've beat him 3 times, that's good. And then Becky Lynch shows up and basically does the same promo that she did in the Fallout video after Money in the Bank, but I'm glad she did it on TV because I thought that she delivered it really well. And, like, they're doing this thing with Becky Lynch, which I think is really interesting because I've said to you quite a lot that she's kind of been quite bland for me for
mm-hmm.
a while. And I think what she's doing right now is really interesting because I think there's a lot of ways you could go with it. This could be the beginning of a Becky heel turn. Or Becky might, you know, finally get to triumph over all the adversity. And I think there's numerous ways they can go. But I think she's, through stuff that's happened to her and through Sunday's result, I think she's a more interesting character now. She's got more to play with.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, first of all, seeing Becky Lynch and Sami Zayn interact just makes my heart happy, right?
Your faves.
But, yay! But Becky Lynch's journey right now is a lot more interesting. And I don't know about you, like, I could see this being the start of a Becky Lynch heel turn, but I think the more interesting story, and I think the smarter story, especially given that they really need proper baby faces in the women's division, right? Like, they don't really have many. They have Naomi and they have Becky, and that's kind of it. So, because I mean, I don't consider Charlotte like a proper baby face. She's just Charlotte. She's, you know, genetically superior. She's still kind of a dick, which is perfect for her, right? Like, she needs to be. She should never be the plucky baby face underdog type character. That's just not who Charlotte is. But I think the story I want them to tell would be more similar to Bailey's NXT story, right? Where you have to find something within yourself and overcome the adversity. And if she finally gets to triumph, then that's such a feel-good moment for everybody. I think the heel turn would be the easier way to go. I think it takes nuance to build a babyface character coming up and having to fight adversity and, you know, going on kind of a personal journey within oneself. And that's the story that I want to see from Becky Lynch. But I mean, I'd be, if the heel turn goes well, then I'd be fine with that too. But I think I'm glad to see her being given more character and being given more motivation to be on TV, and just her desperation, right? Like, she's reacting to the loss and she's so frustrated and saying that she's, you know, the worst part about it is that she's prepared for everyone to screw her over. She knows it's going to happen and she just can't do anything about it. And she seems at wit's end. And I mean, that's something that I think people can connect to. Becky's just, I don't know, she's wonderful.
Yeah, I think she's much more interesting now with this kind of nuance. And trust me, it's not that I'm just being like, here's another reason I like the women's Money in the Bank finish. I genuinely do think that played into her being a little bit more interesting. So I'm not trying to like just hammer home my opinion.
There are lots of things to like about the finish to the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. I like a lot of things about it too. And I think it's with Becky, I don't know, of all the women in the women's division, I feel like she's the best at this kind of delivery.
I don't think she used to be. I think she is now. Because now it's not about her being Becky Balboa or talking like this. Like, she's now, feels real a little bit.
When she gets real, I think her delivery is excellent, and I want to see more of this from her.
I would agree. Kevin Owens comes out. He's going to do a United States Open Challenge again, or US Title Open Challenge. Talks about it being the land of opportunity. I really like the US Open Challenge, so I'm glad they're bringing it back.
Same.
So he says, you know, I'm going to give one lucky individual from Dayton, Ohio a chance at the title. And he said, the face of America Open Challenge begins now. AJ Styles music hits. He comes out. What? And he says that he's going to go for it. He wants to win the US title. And Owens is like, well, you're not a local resident. You're not going to do this. And then, Sondra, what happened? What music hit and what was your reaction? Talk me through second by second. AJ Styles is in the ring with Kevin Owens, and then a bit of music hits. Take us all through, in slow-mo, your reactions. What were you doing? Where were you sitting? What did you have going on? Did you have a beer? Tell us all of it, Sondra.
Well, it was about an hour ago. And because I fell asleep watching SmackDown last night and had to finish it right before we recorded today. And AJ Styles is out there, and I'm kind of like, you know what? You're not from Dayton, Ohio. Kevin Owens has a point. I don't really know why you're out here answering the open challenge. And then all of a sudden, the music of American Alpha hits. And I got so excited and I yelled, Chad Gable! Oh my gosh, it's Chad Gable! And then I texted you in capital letters, Chad Gable! Because I was so excited. And then I tweeted about it. And then Chad Gable came out and he looked glorious and he looked amazing and he looked perfect, and I was so glad to see him. And I was like, you're also not from Dayton, Ohio, but I don't give a fuck. It's so good to see you. And I jumped out. I actually jumped out of my chair and like jumped up and down because I was so happy to see Chad Gable. And I thought that his justification was pretty funny. Like, Owens is like, you're also not from Dayton, Ohio. What is happening here? This is not the stipulation. Like, because I was fully expecting just to see Kevin Owens versus another jobber, right? And I would have been fine with that. I like Kevin Owens' open challenge only being for, like, jobbers that don't stand a chance, right? I think that's an interesting story, is if he does that kind of thing. Because it kind of puts him in direct contrast to John Cena's US Open Challenge, right? Where John Cena was having killer matches with the likes of Adrian Neville and Stardust and Antonio Cesaro and, like, all these people that are up and comers, and he was giving them great matches and allowing them to shine, right? I love the idea that dickhead Kevin Owens just wants to face some local nobody instead. But I don't even care. Like, the promo that Chad Gable gave, or his justification that he moved to Dayton, Ohio this morning, and then gave an address of where he lives, and AJ's like, yeah, I know of it. I've heard of it. Apparently, they said on commentary it was some college campus or something. But, like, that whole part of it came off really wonky, but I didn't even care. I was just like, yes, we're getting Chad Gable versus Kevin Owens. This is amazing. And I thought he looked so good in the match, too, right? Like, his deadlift German suplexes, his transitions, just everything he does. You could tell Kevin Owens was, he looked so good.
He looked far better than I ever thought he, like, see that first German that he gave Kevin Owens?
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Just like right away.
I legitimately, when the music hit, forgot whose music it was.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because I was like, I know the music, but who is it? And then American Alpha came out, and I was like, what? First of all, I thought it was going to be Jason Jordan, to be honest. But still, listen, Chad Gable, I'll take it.
I mean, I love Chad Gable's my preferred member of American Alpha, just because I've been in love with him for a very long time. I love Jason Jordan. I love them both.
Jason Jordan's the underdog story. He was in the failed tag team. And then he had to build himself up again. Chad Gable was an Olympic guy. He got it handed to him, Zandra. That's the story for the future, when they break them up in like 18 months.
Don't talk about breaking them up. It makes me too sad. Do not give me such heartbreak all of a sudden. But, Chad just came back and I was so happy.
But the key there, like, the key is like he had a really good performance. I mean, the match was only 5 minutes. It wasn't long, but like they gave Chad Gable everything that they could give him, and it worked in the sense of like Kevin Owens wasn't prepared for who he was facing, and Chad Gable's such a good wrestler, you know, real wrestler, that I think the dynamics of it worked really well. And I'm
curious to hear from some people, because I know there have been some people on Twitter who've gotten in touch with me in the past when I talk about how much I love American Alpha and how much I miss them, and some people have said I've only seen them on the main roster and I just don't get it, like, they're bland, they're boring, they don't have characters. Like, yeah, they're good wrestlers, but who cares? That's not enough, right? And I totally understand that viewpoint if you've only seen them on the main roster and you haven't gotten invested in them and you didn't see how adorable it was when Chad Gable was stalking Jason Jordan wanting to be his tag partner and, like, putting his name on a towel and, like, coming up behind him in the locker room. It's all, like, fairly creepy but also adorable.
It's all in the execution.
It's all in the execution. But I'm curious to hear from people who aren't that into American Alpha, if this Chad Gable performance did anything for you, like if this made you like him more, if it made it more interesting, you know. Because it was just a wrestling match, but I think this is something Chad Gable does very well, is his personality comes through in his wrestling, and he is so good and dynamic at it that that's what made me fall in love with Chad Gable in the first place. So I want to hear from people. Let me know on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. But yeah, it was so good to see him. For a minute, I was like, maybe he'll win. Of course, he wasn't gonna win. But I had hope. Like when he German suplexed Kevin Owens right away and came straight out the gate and was like, just looking so amazing. It was like, maybe. Oh, sad day.
I think we're gonna see at some point. I think we're gonna see American Alpha move to Raw. Only because if you look at the tag team division, like there's a lot of tag teams on SmackDown. And on Raw, if you take away the Hardys, there's not really another babyface tag team now. You know, Enzo and Cass are split up, whatever, so...
There's not, but why would they move someone else over right now? I mean, Superstar Shakeup is over.
I have a theory of how they could do it. The theory is that American Alpha had a 12-month contract with SmackDown Live. And they are not happy with how they've been utilized on SmackDown. And then they went for lunch with the Olympic gold medalist, Kurt Angle. And he signs them to a contract. And then, when Triple H has his cronies helping him in his match with Kurt Angle at SummerSlam, American Alpha can help Kurt Angle!
That would actually be really good. That would be really, really good.
What's the alternative? They beat the Ascension 100 million times?
Fuck's sake, the Ascension. I'm still annoyed. mad it was them.
There's not many times I wish I'd seen Sandra's facial reaction to things. Well, I mean, no, there is. But, like...
like, thank you.
Like, but, like, the Ascension being revealed is definitely... Because, like, when Sandra and I went and saw shows at WrestleMania weekend with her pals, like, Sandra is as expressive as you would imagine that she would be in these moments.
Accurate.
So I can only imagine when American Alpha, sorry, when the Ascension, Freudian slip, when the Ascension are revealed, that I can imagine the for fuck's sake look that you had. So
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Chad Gable returns. We got an open challenge. It's all good in the world of the SmackDown.
I'm curious, like, do you think they're going to have Chad Gable and Jason Jordan do more singles matches now? Like, I mean, if they don't move to Raw soon?
I don't think so. I think it was just...
Are they going to still be a team? Was this just, like, a one-off?
I think if they were going to be singles, I don't think Jordan would have come out with them at the beginning. So I think it's more... And then, you know, the commentary kept mentioning they're, you know, former tag team champions. So I think it was just a way to reintroduce them on television, so...
I'm more than fine with it.
I actually because... quite like if in a couple of weeks they had Jason Jordan challenge as well.
Yeah.
So that could be good.
I would love to see Jason Jordan versus Kevin Owens. I think that would be great.
Backstage, we got the world's most annoying tag team, Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley, again, talking to Daniel Bryan. You know, they won the Battle Royal 6 months ago. They want the title shot. Bryan said that next week they can face the Usos, and if they beat them, they would get a tag title shot. Just set Mojo Rawley on fire. Please, please, please.
At least, I mean, he wasn't being so bad here.
He looked like that really annoying kid at school that comes to the school disco dressed all smart but still has his spazzy hat on.
Yeah, accurate. I mean, that's exactly how he was dressed. Like, I mean, the Hype Bros have a point here. I like the logic of it. I like that they're paying attention to history. I like that they're, you know, telling a continuing story. I think it's just, it seems annoying to me that we're just kind of picking up where the Hype Bros left off, because I didn't really like the Hype Bros when they left off.
Who did?
So, a lot of people. There are Hype Bros fans, Kenny. Those people exist.
Listen, I don't know if Inside the Ropes is this weird bubble of cool people that are intelligent. I don't know what that is, but I have not once had somebody on Twitter or Facebook say, by the way, Kenny, you really underestimate these Hype Bros.
You haven't? Some of the people I follow are actual, like, legitimate fans of the Hype Bros and Mojo Rawley. Which is fine, if you're a fan of Mojo Rawley.
I don't know how you come across those people.
I don't know. I find them. They find me.
They look for you on the internet. Anyway.
Apparently so. But, I mean... The Hype Bros getting a chance to beat the Usos. I'm curious to know if they're going to lose to the Usos next week, and then that could maybe be another part of Mojo Rawley's story arc, kind of, right? Because he asked for an opportunity to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match and had to face Jinder Mahal and lost. And so I think it might be actually kind of interesting if they face the Usos and lose, then... Where does Mojo go from there? Like, I'm actually finding myself getting kind of intrigued by Mojo Rawley. I think he's actually gotten so much better when he just tones it down and isn't so, like, out there.
I'm going to give you guys an interesting statistic here on Inside the Ropes that we've never revealed before. Do you mind if I reveal something just to listeners?
Sure, depending on what it is, I guess.
Okay, the number is 493. That is how many more fucks Sondra gives about Mojo Rawley than I do. Let's move on. Anyway, yeah, no, listen, if they can turn it into something interesting, good for them. There's a backstage commercial with Sami Zayn doing a taste test with Ty Dillinger for Sonic Shakes. I feel like Dre Warner had this great, like, I can't remember if it was Facebook or Twitter, he was like, why does Sondra get all the things?
This was made for me.
This show was booked for you.
Yes, it was.
The whole thing. Anyway, so
and I was elated.
And Sammy's like giving him the choices, and Ty just gives both of them 10. And Sammy's like, you can't give both of them 10. There has to be one that's better. And he's like, have them both. And Sammy's like, oh, both?
I could have both of them. Yeah, first of all, Sami Zayn with a clipboard analyzing the merits of the Sonic milkshakes or ice cream things or whatever they are, the concretes. That is me every time I have to make a decision in a restaurant. Like, I don't have a clipboard, but oh boy, is it agonizing for me to choose what to eat at any given moment. So again, dorky Sami Zayn, I just identify with him so much. And then Ty Dillinger, of course he would rate them 10. And then, you know, Sami going, is there anything you don't rate a 10? This conversation, it's so cheesy. It's so over the top. I should be angry that Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger were reduced to a Sonic ad on this show, but I'm not even mad because I loved it.
The thing about SmackDown that I find, and I don't want to say this too loud, but like I sometimes feel it's too short because there's not enough people. that I want to see on it. But I know that the alternatives are 3 hours show, and I don't want to see that. So, you know.
Yeah, I'll
take what I get. It was really fun. Daniel Bryan comes out. It's decision time. He brings out all the women from the Women's Money in the Bank match. And he said that, you know, he's been trying to take his emotions out of it and stick to the rule book. And they all kind of, you know, he says that, you know, it appears we're in uncharted territory because, you know, there is no DQ and there's nothing that's in the rule book that says someone can't take the briefcase down for you. But it does read that it's the first woman to hold it. And then he kind of says that, like, so he's kind of going on about it. And then James Ellsworth grabs the microphone and says that being a daddy to a little hippie vegan baby has made Bryan soft, and Daniel Bryan went mental at James Ellsworth.
Oh, he was pissed. I liked angry dad Daniel Bryan saying, if you talk about my baby girl again, I will punch you in the mouth. And he looked so legitimately pissed.
The exact line that he said, which was great, was he said, if you talk about my baby girl one more time, I will punch you in the face so fast that you won't be able to breathe, and I will fire you.
Yes.
Fans chant yes, and it's like, it was cool.
It was really cool. And the thing is, like, something I kind of liked about it as well is Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack has always been such a proponent of James Ellsworth, right? Like, the big hog and all of that. He's always been such an Ellsworth fan. And this gives Daniel Bryan a reason to not be an Ellsworth fan. Now he's like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, which is good, right? And then...
Don't talk about Birdie Joe that way.
No, do not, sir. Becky Lynch is like, come on, make a decision. Natalia, like, gets on at Becky for sucking up to Daniel Bryan, which is, you know, the most pot kettle black thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, seriously.
And then Charlotte said, you know, we're here for a decision, and if we don't get one, Charlotte would make Natalia look like Ellsworth. And then Tamina basically repeated Charlotte's line to Charlotte.
Yeah, that was a little awkward. I don't know what happened there, but...
God, Tamina, she's just... She must have pictures of, like, Vince fucking a goat.
Something. Like, because... she's just not good. And I feel bad, because, I mean, like...
And then it's, like...
She seems like a lovely person,
she does,
but...
But see, thing, right, here... Let's talk very, you know... Let's talk very quietly between friends. See when your dad's a murderer, right?
Right.
You don't need to keep her around anymore. You know what I mean? Like, before it was like, oh, well, you know, our dad's a Hall of Famer, and, like, we should keep her around for, like, you know, generational sakes. It's like, I am sure, anytime I've seen her on Total Divas, she looks like a good laugh. I think she's quite fun in that show. But she's just a very... I think that there's people who could be in that role who would do better than her.
I agree.
And, like, there's guys, like, there are guys and girls, like, I mean, like, Baron Corbin, for example. I don't think Baron Corbin's great by any stretch of the imagination. He's just started, and I think he has shown improvement. But I don't.
Yeah,
think...
she's been there for so long. How long has she been there? Like a decade?
She came in, I want to say 2010. Let me just check. But I don't think she's shown really any improvement in a long time.
I mean, I know she was injured for a long time, but like, look at someone like Naomi, who also came in around that time and
she
wasn't very good
for a long time. May 2010, she debuted.
Okay.
7 years.
So she was with the Usos, right?
Yep.
But you look at someone like Naomi, who came in that same time frame, and she wasn't very good for a long time. But Naomi is actually, you can tell she's putting in the work, and she's gotten so much better. Like, so much better. I believe Naomi is champion now, and I really like her. So I don't really understand why Tamina's still kicking around. I mean, I guess she has a different look to the rest of the girls, which is, you know, good, but...
That's racist.
I'm
kidding.
You know what I mean.
Basically, Daniel Bryan, after all this, I can't believe we spent so much time on Tamina, but yeah, anyway.
Right.
Daniel Bryan said that they all competed in the first ever Women's Money in the Bank, and now Carmella would be the first woman to hand over the Money in the Bank briefcase. The fans go mental, they're cheering. And he said he wasn't going to let someone like James Ellsworth interrupt one of the most important moments in WWE women's history, which was an important sentence to say. He said he was going to take the briefcase and relive the moment on SmackDown next week. The fans booed that at the building because they weren't going to get to see it. and announced that next week we would have the women's Money in the Bank ladder match that includes Tamina, Carmella, Becky Lynch, Natalya, and Charlotte Flair. He took the briefcase, and then later on Talking Smack, he banned James Ellsworth from ringside. So, Sondra, I'm coming to you. What do you think of the decision and having the match next week?
I'm underwhelmed by it, and I don't know exactly why. It just kind of seems like, is it really going to be that good to redo it? I mean, I'm sure that they can tell a good story with it. I'm sure that it's part of a continuing progression, but it's just, I don't know if I want to see a repeat. You know, it's like whenever we have to record podcasts twice, the second time's always kind of like, all right, we've already done this. Let's try to do something good here.
Literally my least favorite thing.
It is awful. Like, awful. And are they going to do a different... I mean, how different is the match going to be? I don't know. Like, I'm just kind of lukewarm on it. I'm not mad. I just was kind of like, oh, I guess this is a thing that we're doing. Like, I kind of like the justice of Carmella having to hand it over. I almost think the better story would have been to her keeping it and being, you know, a dastardly dickhead heel. And I was kind of confused on Talking Smack the way she came across, because she was sitting there like crying about it and like, Daniel, you're taking away this thing that I won. And I mean, how would you feel if someone did that to your daughter? And I was like, I don't really know what you're going for here. Like, she killed it in the opening promo being like, yeah, I won and I don't care and I don't give a shit about any of this stuff. And now I guess I'm just kind of like, all right, this is what we're doing. I think it'll probably be good. I mean, the Money in the Bank ladder match was good. I'm curious to see what kind of shenanigans come into it. I'm curious to see if Carmella just wins again. Like, what's the point of that? I don't know. I don't really feel very strongly one way or the other. How do you feel about it?
I like it. And I think it's because I do feel like it was the plan all along. And I think why they've done it is that they wanted to have a sort of long-term story with the women, and I think that it's worked in the sense of, I think that it's made Becky Lynch have more to go on storyline-wise. It's made Carmella a little bit of a star, really.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked her Talking Smack performance, but somebody in the Facebook community had put a post up, and I'd sort of by mistake read it before I watched SmackDown, and somebody was like, wait till you see how much of a babyface she is in Talking Smack. I didn't get that. I got that she was a whiny heel. Like, I found her performance to be very over the top and kind of comical.
I mean, Daniel Bryan did say, like, they were fake tears, which was, I think, what she was going for. I think she came across...
I think you
maybe,
were maybe
a little too sympathetic,
I think,
but...
maybe you were just getting her to do too many different types of things too soon. Maybe that mm-hmm. was more it was. But I thought that she did well. I didn't get a vibe from it that she was too babyface-ish. And I think the other thing is what they wanted to do was they wanted to put the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, for better or for worse, on an episode of SmackDown, but it's going to be seen, you know, by, I think on average, about 1 million people will watch the bigger pay-per-views on the network. I think that's about the number. So I would say Money in the Bank, you're probably looking at about 700,000. 750,000.
Mm-hmm.
But on SmackDown Live next week, you're going to have between 2.5 and 3 million people seeing the match. And it's funny because when I watched the match on Sunday, I thought it was a little bit, like, safe. Like, it didn't seem like they went all out.
Yeah.
And now it kind of makes sense to me. I think they didn't go all out because they're going to go all out next week and do it there. And I like it. I think that had somebody just won, I don't think I'd have been as interested as I am now with all the stuff that's going on and all the storyline potential. And I think that now, if Carmella was to win next week on her own, look at the bragging rights she's got then.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's very true.
So I liked it. I think that's one of these things. If you hated Sunday, I don't know if there's anything they could have done on Tuesday to change your mind. I think if you were in the middle, you could have liked it. I think if you liked Sunday, you could have liked it. But I've not heard anybody who hated Sunday turn around and say, Tuesday's completely turned around for me. I think that what I've heard instead is the people who hated Sunday are now sort of using the what they didn't like about it to say that, well, you know, now it's just useless. Now it makes no sense. Now they're just giving it away in free TV. It doesn't mean anything. And I feel like, and I'm guilty of this, I'm not saying that I'm better than anybody else on it at all, but I think sometimes we're guilty of, like, wanting to enjoy a story the way we think it should be told.
Mm-hmm. And they're telling a different story than the one that we wanted. And
it's like, so and again, I know I'm using Ricky Gervais again, but Ricky Gervais was talking to the head of Disney Studios, right? And they were talking about, like, they did, like, a survey with all these moviegoers about what genre of movie they liked the most, right? And it was, like, you know, horror and comedy, whatever. What do you think was the genre that won the poll?
Ricky Gervais is doing this poll?
No, Disney did this poll.
Oh, Disney did this
just
poll.
Just to general moviegoers of all ages, what was the genre that won?
Action? I don't know.
Sequel.
Sequel was a genre?
Exactly. That's what people said. So I feel like it plays into this, like, we want a repeat of what we've seen. We want to see another version of what we've seen. So when we're given something else, it's a bit like, oh, I don't know about this. And listen, this new story that they're telling could turn out to not play out well. But I like that they're taking a chance, and I'm the sort of person that I prefer a little bit of adventurous storytelling that goes outside the box and that rattles some cages than just, like I say, if any of those five women had won that match on Sunday, fair and square, I know there's loads of people who would have been really happy and would have got that iconic moment they wanted. I would have been slightly bored by it. Because Money in the Bank, to me, is a concept that I don't really connect with anymore. But they've done something different with it. They've done something unique. And now I'm invested in seeing who lifts it next week. So for me, it worked. I can only say for me, but...
I think, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by it. I can say that. Like, I'm definitely wanting to watch next week to see what happens, which I think is a hallmark of a good storytelling, right?
We get
right?
to watch because... it together.
Yeah, we do get to watch it together. That's exciting. Yay. So, I mean, it'll definitely be... I think I just don't know how to react to it because it is so different, but I appreciate them telling a different type of story, and it's not something that makes me annoyed or makes me turned off to it. I think one of the things I will say about, you know, the result on Sunday, I am so glad that the result on Sunday is the catalyst for this story, right? Like, all of the reactions, everyone who felt very bitter about James Ellsworth, I'm glad that's actually the reason that they're doing another Money in the Bank ladder match, that, you know, they took that and they're using it to tell a longer narrative. And I think that, I mean, who do you want to win? Because I kind of want Carmella to win it again.
I do want Carmella to win it again, but see, this is the problem for me as somebody who watches wrestling, and I've watched it for a long time and stuff. I don't like to watch wrestling in the way that I say, this person has to win for me to enjoy it. And I think that's a danger, I think, because then I think you just leave yourself to be so disappointed if it doesn't go exactly your way.
Like when the Ascension comes out because they're the ones that attacked Breezango.
Yeah, like that. I mean, I think that's it's an extreme example, but yeah, that exactly.
But that's actually when I was so mad about that. That's what was in my head, because I'm always, like you, I'm always saying, like, no, go with the story that they're telling you. You know, you can't dictate the story. You have to kind of go along with what they're telling you. And in my head, I was like, I know I shouldn't be mad about the Ascension because I'm always saying just to go along, but fuck the Ascension,
but,
right?
Yeah, but you knew that was going to be bold. Balls. Big
balls. Oh, of course.
See, it was so bad I couldn't even come up with a word. I was just like, balls, balls. but like I said...
But I mean, I think I would like Carmella to win again, but I think there's a story to be told with multiple outcomes, which I think makes this exciting. I think as I'm kind of thinking about it, I am a little more excited about a repeat Money in the Bank ladder match. I hope that it doesn't just feel like a retread, and I hope that they do something different. And I'm hoping that this one, actually, one of the things I don't know if we got so much in the first one, I'm hoping that it sets up interactions between some of the competitors. Like, I would like Becky to maybe interact with Carmella a lot and go after her and maybe set up some feuds for the future.
Yeah, I mean,
so I think they have a chance to do that.
and I would be interested for people who, I know there's a lot of people listening to this who didn't like it, so I would just be curious, like, tweet us and let us know, like, are you open-minded to the match next week? Are you open-minded to being good, or are you going into it, and I'm not saying you're wrong, it's your own judgment, are you just kind of going into it now going, I don't like this story? I'm intrigued. So just let us know. I'd be keen to hear what you think. Now, there was a segment in front of the live crowd that they did put on the YouTube channel. They didn't go on the show, with Mike and Maria Kanellis talking about Love Again. Their theme tune might be my new favourite.
It's quite good. I'm glad they didn't put that on the show.
Although it kind of makes me happy. I'm like, the show was so stacked that they didn't even have time for Mike and Maria.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like, we didn't even have time for the Fashion Police. I feel like SmackDown's in a really good place right now. So, Main event time, Jinder Mahal against Luke Harper, returning to SmackDown Live.
He's alive. He's alive, and he exists, and he's still a beautiful specimen of a human being. Like, I really just wanted Luke Harper to win this match and then go on to win the entire world, but sadly it was not to be.
Sadly not. The match was fine. They were having a back and forth match, and then when Jinder did a superplex onto Luke Harper, and then Baron Corbin's music hit, and he just came out, big fucking Cheshire grin his face, acted like he was going to cash in, didn't, just did a lap of the ring, walked away, jawjacking at Jinder, saying, you know, I can do this whenever I want. I thought it was a really good, quick use of Baron Corbin to just kind of be like, fucking with the champion, because that's what Baron Corbin would do. I liked it. What did you think of Baron's appearance?
I mean, it's the exact same thing Carmella did in the Naomi Lana match at Money in the Bank, right? It's the whole, I guess you're toying with the champion for some reason to get in their head. I just don't really know what purpose it serves, because...
Well, don't you want the champion to be on edge?
Maybe, but wouldn't you rather have them forget about you and then, like, sneak up from behind when they're least expecting it?
We know what kind of cash in Sondra would do.
I don't know. That's just me, but
Devious Reinstein with the cash.
Of course, but I'm curious to know how long this is going to go on. Like, is he going to try and interfere in all of Jinder's matches? Because the Money in the Bank contract holder doesn't even necessarily have to be involved with the champion all that much, right? Like, they just have that in their back pocket for a year. So I don't know. I mean, I know it's right after the pay per view, so obviously they're going to call attention to it. It's fine. I like the idea, though, that Baron's like, I can do this whenever I want because I'm Baron Corbin. Like, that's the kind of Money in the Bank contract holder I assumed Baron Corbin would be nonchalant, dickhead Baron Corbin, who's like, I will do this on my time and I cannot be bothered with any of you, because that's Baron Corbin, right?
That's Big Baza Corbs. Then after, Baron kind of, you know, was getting into Jinder's head. Harper tries to do a roll up, Jinder kicks out. And then Luke Harper is kind of like, you know, like focusing in on Jinder to kind of, you know, to get the finish. When one of the Singh brothers gets an apron, Harper tries a clothesline, Singh brother ducks, and then Jinder catches Harper with the boot and his Cobra Slam for the win at like 10 minutes. The match was fine.
It was fine. I didn't realize it was the main event.
Oh, really?
Really? Like, and then the show was just over. I think it just kind of speaks to Jinder in the main event. I just kind of keep forgetting that that's a thing.
I will say, though, that when Randy Orton came out post-match, I thought that Orton showed a lot of really good fire in the segment.
He did. I did boo him, but he did.
I think it goes back to what you were saying, though. Like, you know, like, I don't think this feud is clicking at all, but I admire Randy Orton for putting so much into it, because if I was Randy Orton, I'd probably be like, fuck this,
right?
But like, when he was like, you know, attacking Jinder and doing the hanging DDT over the timekeeper's barricade bit, like, it was really good, and it was really, you know, the crowd were really into it,
doing the RKOs to the Singh brothers and everything. I mean, he looked...
Yeah.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun, for sure. I'm not that happy that this feud is continuing. So...
Oh, no, God. Who is?
There's that. Nobody, I don't think.
Nobody. I'm going to give this show a thumbs up. Big thumbs up. I thought it was a really fun show. And the best test of this was, see, when this show finished, I wanted more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, thumbs up for me too. I think it accomplished a lot, and it's Daniel Bryan being back just makes me so happy. But also, Daniel Bryan is being an authority figure who's actually like doing some things, right? Like, he made a decision about the Money in the Bank contract, and I think it's also kind of funny that, you know, like on the show where the general manager comes back, AJ Styles makes the match with Kevin Owens and Chad Gable, but whatever. It was really fun. I'm not going to complain about any of it. The show was basically made for me to make me feel better, and it did.
It did its job. So thank you everyone for listening. Thank you to everyone who signed up to Patreon. I know a lot of you signed up to listen to us talk about Money in the Bank. I hope we did it justice for you. I thought it was a really good discussion. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. David and I will be talking Great Balls of Fire on there. There's a new Lucha Underground podcast up there right now you can listen to. I'm going to try in the next 10 days to get a lot of these Patreon podcasts done. If you have pledged a podcast to us, please do be as patient as you can with us. We are just trying to get through a lot of stuff at one time. The Goldberg tour is next week. That's coming up. So if you want to come join us, it's insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to see Big Bill in Glasgow, Manchester, or London. Sondra will be there. You can see her and say hello.
It'll be fun. Come say hi.
She will be on the clock, though, so don't speak to her for too long.
Big Boss Kenny over here.
The thing is, because Sondra's actually going to be, just so you know, Sondra's going to be the front of the queue when you meet Goldberg. Sondra's going to be the security to get to Goldberg. So, you know, you can't be holding up the line, folks.
I'm basically Bill Goldberg's bodyguard for the night.
yeah, let's go with that.
We'll go with that, right?
So, Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And hear our Money in the Bank chat, along with loads of other bonus content, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
Be nice to somebody you don't even know, because that's what David says.
That is what David says. We don't really sign off SmackDown with anything pleasant
do we? I say something, then you go, right, so wait a minute. We'll do a flip, right? You say something, don't say the word bye, right? I'll be you at the end. You say something to throw to me, right? So you finish the show and then throw to me.
Oh, I feel like this is just very strange role reversal. But anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. And we will be back to talk to you next week. Tons of stuff going on. So we'll be back then.
Bye.